One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Fleet of them. Look on the ASA.
My gosh.
They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
This isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
That UFO podcast is powered by Zencastr. Zencastr is one of the world's leading platforms for recording and hosting podcasts. The open beta strives to put the power of studio quality remote video production into the hands of anyone with a story to tell. Features include HD video recording, studio quality sound, chat and footnotes. All running right from your browser so you can record from anywhere without ever installing anything. Check out the links in the show description to find out more. Hi everyone and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Andy here with a Shadows of Your Mind preview show. This is for the upcoming December issue that should be out round about the 11th of December as we record this. I've got Dave Partridge from Shadows of Your Mind magazine joining me. Dave, how are we?
I'm very well, Andy. How are you?
I am spectacular. Listen, Dave, lots to pack into this one, and yep. These previous shows have proven popular with the listeners because hopefully it's found you some more readers of the magazine. Again, I can't stress enough, as I have done so in the past, it's free. It's an incredible magazine. The work, the quality that goes into it is better than anything you will buy off the shelves. I promise people that. I'm not just saying that. I just wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. And not just because Dave's a friend either. So the magazine is top quality and the December issue is almost ready, Dave, isn't it? What can we expect this month? What's your big highlights?
Well, firstly, I should possibly point out that this was supposed to come out in September. But obviously I've had, you know, people who know me know that I've been gone through a pretty torrid time in the last few months. Which is why it's been delayed. However, back in April, I spoke to Chase Kletsky, the wonderful Chase, who graciously agreed to be the guest editor of this issue. And we decided we'd do a focus on the women of ufology, basically because I can't recall any podcast, documentary, or magazine ever doing one before. I mean, ufology is generally considered to be like an old guard kind of topic, you know, 95% predominantly male researchers, investigators, authors. And, you know, I thought it was high time that, you know, the female side of it, you know, we kind of celebrate all those women who do put in the work and aren't quite as recognized as their male counterparts.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. I know I had an email some time ago. I don't get it often, but from a listener, and it was just to highlight, you know, there was a lot more male guests than female. Not something that was ever deliberate, but like you say, the numbers in ufology, especially in the past, were heavily weighted towards that probably older male demographic. And I think that definitely has changed over the last few years. Not to spoil some of the names on the cover, Dave, but, you know, Christina Gomez has her podcast. You've got Diana Pasulka right back in the headlines recently with a book coming out. She's going to be on the show. Chase Klutzke, guest editor, has been on the podcast. Shao Ma, Deborah Katz, and others as well. And there are more and more women who have been prominent in the past. Paola Harris, again, to name another. But I think you're starting to see a new generation of podcasters, maybe magazine writers, you know, bloggers, maybe is a more modern term for that, starting to come up and really show themselves and prove that they're as good, if not better, than what's been before. And that can be only a good thing for the subject, isn't it? It's another voice, regardless of gender.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I really wanted to delve into in this article is to show that, you know, this isn't a new thing. There have been plenty of women who have put in the work and the research over the years. But because this subject has been viewed as predominantly a male-orientated subject, you know, these individuals have been kind of pushed to the wayside a little bit. And whether that was, you know, because of the, you know, the stigma and the signs of the times, you know, it's all right saying, oh, that's just how it was back then, but it wasn't all right because, you know, as we've seen in the last couple of years, you know, everybody should be treated equally, you know, regardless of subject, topic or whatever, you know. And I think, you know, highlighting some of the great work that was done in the past is going to be a way to kind of find some sort of balance within the subject, which I think is sorely needed. You know, for example, you look at APRO and NICAP, the UFO, you know, civilian research organizations of the past. I mean, APRO was started by Carl Lorenzen, who is held in very high regard by people like Richard Dolan, just for the amount of work that she put in and the amount she contributed to the subject. So, you know, going back from the 50s and then through the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, you know, right up to present day, I want to show that there's women out there that you need to actually research yourself and have a look at the work they were doing at the time.
Absolutely. Let me ask, because I think I asked you this way back at the time when you announced it, or you let some of us know privately it was going to happen. Chase being the guest editor,
yeah.
What does a guest editor do?
Basically, I had discussions with Chase regarding the content of the issue. It doesn't mean that she's going through and choosing all the interviews and deciding who goes in, who doesn't go in. You know, it's basically, it's more of a badge of honor, basically, where it takes a little bit of the pressure off me. Chase has come up with some really good ideas. She interviews Bryce Sable in the issue. That was done off her own back. And it's just generally getting another voice other than kind of like my own in the editorial of the magazine. So, you know, she came up with the top 10 feature, which is kind of like a back to basics of North American cryptids. You know, and she's been suggesting a few things as we've gone along. You know, it's been, I can't thank her enough for the patience that she's shown over the last few months as well. It's been, you know, she's been brilliant.
I imagine it'll show in the end product of the issue that it's a little bit better than normal, Dave, having Chase's touch there to fix out all your sloppy mistakes. But no, you have a very high standard to adhere to, so I imagine Chase is the perfect person to kind of keep that going with you.
Oh yeah, and she'll tell me if it's not. That's the good thing about it. You know, if I've done something wrong, and I've run, you know, everything that I've cobbled together for the issue, I've run by her and to get her opinion. And you know, this, you know, at the time of us recording this, the Women of Ufology feature isn't quite finished. But when I do finish it, I will be sending it to Chase for her comments. And I can guarantee that she'll tell me if I've done something wrong.
Awesome. Dave, what have been some of the issues you've had? This is something we spoke about off air in terms of the piece itself and women in ufology in terms of some of the reaction.
Well, I've kind of hinted at this during, you know, over the last few weeks. And it's people wanting to know, you know, I did put a tweet out some time ago saying, if I was to do a feature like this, who would be your top female researchers in the subject? And you get a few names bandied back and forth. When I tweeted out, you know, I mock up the cover and see what works, what doesn't, and put some headshots on there. And it's not necessarily just those people who are on the cover who will be in that feature. I mean, the list I have is pushing like 50 different names covering different areas of ufology, whether it be research, investigations, authors, you know, documentary makers. So there's a good scope of people that are going to be in the magazine, but they're not necessarily represented either on the cover or, you know, in, you know, a tweet is only so many characters and not everybody has a Twitter account. So I can't, you know, I can't tag everybody as well, which is a shame, but, you know, there's going to be a good variation of characters in there.
Yeah, I think that's just natural as well. Like I've done it in the past where you want to mention, if someone says, oh, mention a podcast or some recent interviews that have been really good, then I'll say, oh yeah, there was Ryan Spriggs or Luis Jimenez or there was this, and you don't mention any number of others. And it's not because out of spite or anything bad, it's just you can't mention everyone and can't see everyone. And in the same breath, I don't get upset or offended when I'm not mentioned in any lists or names like that. So like you say, there's always someone you're going to have to disappoint. And it's nice though that people are so passionate that they've got favorite researchers and they have favorite bloggers or favorite podcasters and they want to speak up. And like you say, you're the type of guy who goes, yeah, that's great. And there's 50 women pointed out and singled out and highlighted within this issue, which is a huge number anyway, especially when it's, well, normally it's one person, but you've got Chase helping out as well now. But that's a huge amount of work still to undertake just for a very small team of two.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I first had the idea of this, I thought, oh, you know, I should be able to get, you know, 20 people. You know, if I stick to 20, that'll be fine. But as I was going through and doing the research, you know, more and more names were coming out. And as I was reading other books, you know, there'd be someone else highlighted in the older books. So that meant I had to go back and, you know, kind of do a lot more research than I originally considered I'd have to do, which was brilliant. I mean, off the back of this as well, you know, I've purchased, you know, a few more books by some of these authors in there. So I'm hoping that it lets people, you know, just check out a few of the names, check out their work, and maybe learn something new. Because I'm, even though there's going to be like 50 names in there or so, undoubtedly I would have missed people out. And, you know, that, like you said, that's not through spite or anything like that. Although, you know, there's a couple I've missed out for, you know, obvious reasons. But, you know, it's because when you're doing a feature of this magnitude, you do forget people from time to time. And especially when you're working on your own as well. Or, you know, even, you know, running a few names past Chase, that, as I have done in the past, there are going to be names that just slip by the wayside, because they're not in your kind of, they're not in your sphere at that time.
Yeah.
Or you kind of concentrating on something else and, you know, a name will get bypassed and that's, you know, it's just how it is. It's just, I want to just point out, it wasn't deliberate. Or it isn't going to be deliberate. No, it's just a slip of the mind.
And that's it. And there's 50 people within there, and I'm looking forward to checking it out myself, Dave. There's a lot of other great content though coming up in this, and we won't spoil it for everyone, and we want people to go out and check the magazine out. But there's a few highlights we wanted to mention. George Knapp and Colm Kelleher, Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. What were you chatting about with the gents?
Well, I think when that book came out, it took everybody by surprise. No one had an inkling that was coming out in the UFO community. Because I think the first time that most people knew of it is when Leslie Keane retweeted, you know, and it's like everyone suddenly goes onto Amazon and buys it, breaks Amazon's system.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was the talking to them and talking about behind the scenes at Bass while they were working in conjunction with ORSAP. It was really interesting to get Dr. Keller's kind of point of view into the processes involved with the setting up of Bass after, you know, pretty much as soon as the Bigelow signed the contract with ORSAP, with the DOD. And so we get a good insight into that. And we spoke to George a bit about the material he got from the documents and material he got from Russia I don't mean material is in debris. I mean just the information.
Okay. You need to clear that one up, yep.
I don't want to start vicious rumors like that. But yeah, it's just really good speaking to them and getting a first-hand account of what they were doing. Because we only know of like ATIP as kind of this little group that was headed by Lou Elizondo and did investigations into military encounters with UAP. But when it was mentioned in Skinwalkers of the Pentagon, that ATIP was a nickname given to ORSAP for the, for the reasons they needed to get through, it needed to get funding. That was especially interesting, I think, because you had one version of ATIP that wasn't the version of ATIP that we already knew about.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
And it's interesting that's still causing so much controversy now online. Even a few days ago, there was a huge debate kicking off. I think Joe Murgia was involved and a few others about the wording, the language. Are people being derogatory towards OSAP and ATIP? And it still stirs up a lot of emotions for some people that these two acronyms, which essentially, not to say they were exactly the same thing, but you know, one was almost a predecessor to the other, and not to kick off all those arguments and discussions, but it's amazing how much it can bring to the boil with people and how much emotion it can evoke.
It is, and rather than the fact that, you know, there was actually a body like this that existed to investigate these kind of things, you know,
exactly.
That's the whole point of it. It doesn't matter what it was called or who was involved. It's the fact that it actually happened and had funding to be able to do what it needed to do.
It's like arguing over the name of the Ghostbusters in the original lineups, isn't it? Like, it's, never mind the fact that they busted ghosts and ran around New York in the 80s. And it's like, yeah, but they used to be called this. But yeah, then they were called this. But yeah, he used to be in that lineup. And then he was in the crossover. And it doesn't matter. Like, we're losing sight of the fact that this group went and caught ghosts. And this was their job. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It's incredible what people have to nitpick over, but I suppose some of those details are important. But I've said before, I'm not a details guy. I just think, like you say, it's incredible to hear about the content that went on within these organizations. And even if small details here and there over time are lost or a bit hazy for various different reasons, incredible to read about, and always great to read George and Colm or listen to them, depending on the medium you've chosen.
Yeah, absolutely.
You had a few other interviews lined up with people like John Majerovsky, Bob Spearing. What were they talking about?
Yeah, I mean, John Majerovsky, if people don't know him, he has a YouTube channel called UFOs on the Level. And he's basically a Freemason with a UFO YouTube channel. But I've been speaking to him for, you know, the best part of a year. And he's a really, really cool guy. I mean, if you haven't checked out his channel, then take a look at some of the videos. I mean, he doesn't hold back. He approaches everything with a degree of intelligence. But I wanted to get the story behind his Masonic journey, from when he decided to become a Freemason and how he's adapted his life to basically serve the Brotherhood, and what he's actually doing in tying all that with UFOs and, you know, everything else associated with the topic, like consciousness and things like that. So it was really good to hear, get an inside kind of story on, what a Freemason does and how they go about getting to where he is. Because he's not just a regular Freemason. He's part of other kind of brotherhoods. It's all in the interview, to be honest. I don't want to say too much about who he's a member of.
Yeah, absolutely. And John is someone I DM'd a little while back, and I would quite like to speak to him on the podcast, hopefully in the new year as well. So I'll drop you a message to maybe speak to John for me. I know he does quite a lot of podcasting himself, and like you say, with the YouTube channel and whatnot. But yeah, really interesting, very nice gentleman as well. Yeah. And Bob Spearing.
He's a MUFON investigator, a state director. for Northern California, if I remember. I think, or was that someone else? I know, I've had so many MUFON state directors in my head at the moment. I can't remember who does what or where. But Bob is someone that we featured in the magazine before. His previous article was, have UFOs contributed to the changing of the color of the paint of cars during interactions and encounters, which was quite a bizarre but fascinating article. But this one, he's examining the phenomena of alien abductions and why people are told, you know, kind of like, do not worry, we're not here to harm you, don't be afraid. But he puts it in such a way that it seems like whenever people are told this, it's not, they're kind of almost too polite about it. And that's something that he wanted to examine over the course of this 13-page article. So, yeah, it's quite a big one. But he's got a book coming out based on this as well. So, yeah, that'd be good to get my hands on that as well.
Awesome. That's something, again, I'll hopefully get Bob on to talk about his book that's due out on that, because that's really interesting, especially to drill down into that niche of one particular part of alien abductions, not just the abduction experience itself, but that very, very small detail. But it's a huge thing, isn't it? Because there's so much chatter even now about threat narratives and you know people being abducted against their will, but it's a very wholesome experience some of the time, but then other times it isn't. But regardless, it's something that you don't necessarily want to happen. But yeah, so that's an interesting one for me. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, one of the other interviews that we have got is with L.A. Marzulli, who's kind of big on the Nephilim, the Watchers, ancient archaeology, giants, that kind of thing. And he's also done a lot of research with Chase as well. So that was a perfect interview to include in the issue. And I got to speak to him about his kind of life story. and when people will read it, he had quite an incredible first 30 or 40 years of his life, which was totally unrelated to anything that he's doing now. But it's definitely worth a read, you know, just from the personal standpoint and how he got to where he is today.
Again, that'll be interesting. I am familiar with L.A. Marzulli from Howard Hughes Unexplained podcast, a regular on Howard's show. So that'll be an interesting one to hear about the background. And anyone listening to this knows I like the dives into people's histories as well and how they got to where they are now. And I think how those people have had their lives shaped can really help influence and understand the context of what they talk about, why they talk about it, and those kind of experiences that have led them to be kind of names or figureheads or prominent people within ufology, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, some of the stuff he was talking to me about, I was just blown away. You know, what that guy went through in the early part of his life was just astounding.
Can you give any small tease without ruining the article?
He wrote music for a 56-piece Buddhist orchestra. Was it a Buddhist orchestra? It was definitely an orchestra in an ashram of Eastern mysticism. So yeah, that's one small piece of his former life.
A very interesting life, definitely, anyway. And also, last couple of bits, Dave, just to round off the preview, you've got some stuff on Flight JK-297, yep?
Yeah, this is one that's possibly not so well known, but has been kind of hinted at in the last 12 months or so. Basically, this could be the first and only case of a UFO causing a plane to turn around and return to its starting point. It was basically a plane in 1979 that was flying from Mallorca to Tenerife. So it's going over Spain, the Mediterranean, Pillars of Hercules, that kind of area. And the captain saw some lights. He was on to air traffic control about it. And, you know, the Spanish government got involved. There was all kinds of, you know, different bizarre happenings that happened during this flight in a period of like 3 or 4 hours. And eventually, you know, the plane just returned to its original starting point. And, well, actually it turned around and went to Valencia, I think. But yeah, that's really good seeing the, there's a transcript of the conversation between the pilot and air traffic control, which is quite eye-opening.
It's an interesting one because it's a delicate area to go into, especially when we've had so many planes disappear or crash over the years, because at the end of the day, there's a human element to this. It's not just an object crashing. There, obviously, this one turned round, but some of the flights that go missing, there are people who lose loved ones and all that kind of stuff, which is horrible.
Yeah.
But there's the conversation of, you know, those odd occasions where there may have been that chance that there's been something exotic happened, which is an incredible conversation to have, but it errs on that really unsettling side, doesn't it? And it makes me think of, for example, the opening scenes of Fringe, the TV show, if you ever watched yeah. that, where the plane lands and everyone's kind of dissolved, or some of the X-Files episodes, or just that you're, it's so vulnerable that you're up there 30, 40, 50,000 feet in the air. And again, that we'd hear about these pilots seeing these objects 40 or 50 feet from them, and how terrifying an experience that must be to suddenly feel so vulnerable.
Exactly.
In any type of aircraft.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, that was it. Yeah, just to say, like, even if you're a pilot of a commercial aircraft, or you're a passenger, or you're a Top Gun F-18, F-22 pilot, to suddenly not know what you're dealing with.
Yeah, and this is exactly, relating to some of the wording we've seen in, this new bill that's being passed, is there a threat to civilian air traffic? There were Spanish fighter jets scrambled to, check out these lights that this pilot was seeing. So, they're not just going to send up some, Spanish Air Force fighters just for the hell of it. You know, it's not going to be a reflection of Venus off the cockpit windscreen, is it?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward again to that. It's shaping up to be a very good issue, Dave. And there's a lot more included, but finally, we were going to mention you've got an interview with Dr. Irina Scott.
Yeah, if anyone knows Dr. Irina Scott, she's based in America. I think it's University of Colorado or Cornell University or somewhere like that. But she's done a lot of work on ball lightning and plasmas in the past. But she's taken a look at the other evidence around the famous Pascagoula case, Calvin Parker and Charles Higson. Which happened in Mississippi in 73, was it? You've had Calvin on, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I mean, that was one of the early shows now. And that was one that I wouldn't even call an interview, but not in the way that Stephen Bassett or Grant Cameron just talked. I just let Calvin come on and retell his story, and that was incredible to hear. Let me ask you, though, and this is maybe something we can dive into, and it was 1973, sorry, to answer your question, yeah. This event, you say 73 was 50 years ago almost. It's a long time, and we are still seeing quite regular literature or updates and new witnesses and new statements coming from a very, very old case. Is it something that you still feel there is merit in, personally?
I think when it first came out a couple of years ago, when the first book came out by Calvin Parker, I think it was called The Pascagoula Incident, it was a relatively kind of unknown case at the time. It wasn't so famous as possibly Travis Walton or Betty and Barney Hill. It was one of those cases that people had always been aware of but never known too much of the details, because there wasn't the information available.
Yeah.
But I think since those books have come out, there was another one, I think, a follow-up to it. Since they've come out, there have been more and more people looking into it and going back through the records and the newspapers and looking for interviews around the time that the incident happened. And there is corroborative evidence from other witnesses, and other people just confirming that something was seen over the Mississippi River in the Pascagoula area. So I think it lends credit to Calvin Parker. But yeah, like you said, there is a hell of a lot of material coming out. And at some point, when is enough enough?
Yeah.
Or when is it too much? Because, you know, with some cases, you do run the risk of oversaturating it, like we've seen with Roswell, like we've seen with Rendlesham. You know, if you put too much information out there, people just get bored of it.
Yeah.
Until like 10 years down the line, and then, you know, perhaps the new generation will pick it up, and then the conversation starts again.
It's an interesting one, like you say. It's been so long, and there was nothing for so many decades like social media or the internet for stories like this to really circulate internationally, out with of, you know, newsletters or niche magazines or the odd documentary or like, you know, Strange But True on TV. Mm-hmm. And then these stories have persisted, I think, because of the how long they've been around. But then, really controversially, slightly surprisingly, but the Penturk episode that myself and Graham and yourself done recently has caused a lot of debate online, especially on the YouTube channel. You can see a lot of people debating on there about the validity. And that's something that only happened a couple of years ago. But you can see already the divisiveness that's caused by witnesses or one particular witness who is adding more and more. Even the day or so after we released that episode, there was more information came out from the same witness changing the story and adding to the story. Yeah. And again, for me, it's just, like you say, okay, an interesting story. You can believe it or not believe it. And then all of a sudden, more information comes out. And then in the space of a few weeks, more information comes out. And then a couple of years later, it's a case of, are they trying to keep this alive just by fueling the fire over and over and over again? And like you say, there comes a point, whether it's 50 years or 5 years, you know, what is the complete story? Or are we just always going to get something else added on to that fire? And it happened with Roswell for a long, long time as well.
Yeah. I mean, not to put too much, you know, more about Penturk, I think the fact that the supporters of that story, they are just going on blind faith of what that one witness saying in the face of all the contradictory evidence where there's actual documentation. And, you know, there was even an article in a UK magazine a couple of years ago where that witness has actually debunked herself within that article, you know, unknowingly, although she tries to shake it off as, oh, but it can't be that just because they've said so. You know, this obviously happens. She's very certain of what happened. And it's her word or nobody's word in her case, I think.
It's certainly interesting, like you say, with cases that are so old and it's hard to disprove them because there's such a maybe a lack of that evidence or data. But modern day, and this is probably to the detriment of anyone, I suppose, in the modern day trying to come forward with a UFO case that we would never discourage, is that there's the potential for so much more data that you're always going to be under more scrutiny, which is probably perfectly natural. And maybe that's a good heads up for a future issue for you, Dave, as well. I might stretch myself to writing one of your articles one time if you wanted to attempt that. But Dave, what's in the works for any future issues that you may have planned? Have you got anything you could tease, anything you've got on the drawing board just now?
I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but I have started collecting material for a book on Welsh UFO cases.
Lovely.
Which, you know, is really fascinating. I've been buying some of the older books from the 1970s relating to the Dyfed Enigma, the whole Broadhaven, Welsh Triangle area. I've been in touch with SUFON as well regarding the material that they're holding. And yeah, I'm just really going to dig into that for the first 6 months of next year and hopefully get something out towards the end of next year. With regards to the next issue, I don't know, I might do a focus on podcasts. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely.
But there is one interview that I do have with somebody who's experienced a lot of high strangeness. And they sent that to me quite a while ago. So I'm grateful for them that they're still interested in me running what they provided.
Excellent. Dave, just again, how can people find yourself and also how can they download the magazine when it's out?
Okay, when it's out, and I shall put that on Twitter, @ Shadows Magazine, probably pin it to the profile or, it'll go around the Twitterverse anyway. You can either visit shadowsmagazine.co.uk and download all issues for free. Or if you just want to read it at your leisure, then go to issuessuu.com/shadowsofyourmind and you'll be able to read all issues on there. It's totally interactive. There's hyperlinks, so you can go off various different rabbit holes if you want.
And I just want to mention, Dave, because I know you don't do this very well yourself, but just to support you, is there a Buy Me a Coffee link or a Patreon or anything like that people can support? Because it's a free magazine and you put a lot of work into it.
Cheers. Yeah, there's a Buy Me a link. Buy me a link. There's a Buy Me a Coffee link in there, yeah. Yeah, Buy Me a Coffee link. But obviously, it's up to you. You know, I'm not going to badger on about it. Never do.
I would throw Dave a Christmas coffee his way because he does a lot of work into this. And like myself, I appreciate he's got a family and a job and everything else. So if you can, it's a tough time of year for everyone, but slick a couple of dollars, whatever it might be, for a coffee for Dave. And I'm sure that'll be appreciated, but he'll never ask you for absolutely. It himself.
No, thanks, mate. Appreciate that.
No problem. Dave, always good speaking with you.
Yeah, you too, mate.
That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rat. Meditated again and stayed full on meta. I can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. Jumped back and nearly kissed myself, and I climbed out the window after the elf, and I woke up in my bed, and there was something on my head, and everything was weird, and everything was red, and I coughed up my boys, they thought this was noise, they thought it was a dream, they thought it was my toys, they thought it was my problems, and they think I should take care of me, and I don't know what to do, because it doesn't really scare me. We'll be right back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.